Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Wednesday, March the 7th, 2018, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Your second daily dose of happy for the day. And we got off to a good start this morning. We were pretty happy this morning. Cindy and I were having a good old time talking about money and the law of attraction. So, Wendy, we got to try to match that today. Although we always seem to match it or beat it. So I don't know why I keep saying that, but I do. It's something to say when you start the show, you know.
But I'm ready to jump in. Wherever we land is where we land.
Well, there you go. That's good. That's good. And you know, we've got happy / sad times going on here in the Northeast. Most of the Northeast is mourning because it's snowing, and the minority are celebrating because it's snowing. So I figured I'd join the minority because celebrating is a lot more fun than mourning. So, and plus it supports my wife because she's like thrilled because this means she gets to do some more skiing one more time this year. And, you know, that's good. I like
does that mean she like literally goes out skiing in the next couple of days while the snow is fresh? Is that?
Oh, yeah. It's really the only reason that we're not out there right now is because it's just coming down so hard. So it wouldn't be fun. But I guarantee you we'll be out there tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
well,
she doesn't waste time.
We don't have skiing out here, so that's why I'm asking these questions.
Yeah, not too much skiing going on in Dallas, I would imagine. Occasional snow, but not that. No, I wouldn't think. And not too much in the way of nearby mountains, are there? I don't know what there is near Dallas.
Not at all.
Not really. Okay.
Very flat.
Pretty
flat. As a matter of fact, a number of years ago, I was in Seattle, Washington for the first time.
Oh.
And I was just so thrilled with looking at the whole landscape of that state and how, or that city, and how tall the trees were, and just how there were so many ups and downs. We were driving through like residential areas just to kind of see it. And it was holy cow, the elevations of the roads in some cases were like in San Francisco.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I was loving the tall pine trees. And what was fascinating is on our flight home, you know, we were circling Dallas and waiting to land. And I had just this stark awareness of how different our landscape was. And then as we got in our car and we were driving home, I went, we have short trees. I mean, I never really thought about it. I've been here over 30 years and I'm like, our trees are so short. I mean, by comparison, and I realized we have such flat land.
Oh, yeah.
So I would say, no, we don't have mountains. We have like little teeny hills.
You do. Okay.
You know, but we do not have mountains.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, that's fair enough. Actually, I remember when Louise and I went to Seattle, I'm not sure how many years ago it was quite a few. I'm going to say 8 to 10. I'm not sure how long ago it was. But we went to Seattle. We were there for almost a week. Met up with a friend of hers that she knew from when she lived in Mount Snow, Vermont. So that was nice to have that kind of reconnection. Plus, to have somebody to, you know, give you the personal tour of the city and so forth. That was great. But the one drawback is while we were there, the entire time it was half foggy. And so we couldn't see Mount Rainier, which, of course, is the big mountain right outside the city. Mm-hmm. And Louise was a little disappointed about that. I'd seen the Cascades quite a few times. In fact, I lived in Oregon for a while, so I'd been up there, you know, quite often. But she had never seen it before. And she was, you know, she wasn't really, like, really disappointed, but just a little disappointed. So we climb on the plane to leave, and it's a sunny day, and she says, ooh, I wonder if we're going to be able to see the mountain. And we look outside the plane, and sure enough, she can see the mountain there. And she says, oh, but I'm on the wrong side of the plane. When we take off, I'm not going to be able to see it. I said, no, be patient, be patient. So we took off. We did a nice 180-degree turn, and there was the mountain right outside her window. And she was just thrilled. So,
that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. And those mountains are spectacular. They are very dramatic mountains, to be sure.
Yep, they are.
So today we're dealing with snow, and 10 years ago we were dealing with mountains. And, you know, it's all about the outdoors, right?
Wow. So that's your win, is enjoying the lovely snow falling. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, we had like one flurry in Dallas this whole winter season, which normally we get something a little bit more than that. So, yeah, we kind of missed out on the fun of the snow coming down. As a matter of fact, trees are blossoming already. Grass is already turning green here.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. The spring is definitely on its way.
That reminds me of what it was like when we were in Virginia. Virginia tends to flower earlier than New England as well. So, Yeah, I remember that. I remember one time being out in the middle of February in shorts and short t-shirt and just walking around and saying, "This is February? I don't understand this."
That's like my first Christmas here. I couldn't believe that I was walking around in shorts and a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And not having to lug a coat through a mall was like, wow, right. This is really easy.
Yep. It's the truth. It really is. So, what's
going on? Well, I would love to share. I'd love to share my update on Project X.
I was just going to ask you.
Yeah, I'm really excited where I am. So yesterday, you know, I was sharing that not only had I gone through like 4 days of like almost zero insight or, you know, information or connection with my inner being giving me new stuff. But then yesterday I went through a day of just a lot of frustration and anger and just a lot of feelings that did not feel very good. And yet I was guided not to jump out of them and go to happy too quickly, mm-hmm. which was a very unusual thing for me.
Sure.
And so I went, okay, I followed the guidance. And I leaned into discomfort, and I was asking myself a lot of questions. And what came from it was really quite astounding, and it led to what happened after the show for me, more insight, where I got this phrase, which was, something like, Project X will be more than you have ever imagined or could have ever imagined it to be.
Right.
So that came. Now, those words in itself could mean very little to some people. But because it came with an internal sense of exhilaration and goosebumps all over my body and like a spontaneous thing where I burst out in tears. Mm. It wasn't like I planned it. I didn't like hear the words and go, oh, now I'll cry. It's like the message penetrated through me so powerfully that tears just poured out of me.
Wow.
And I went, that only happens when I know I'm getting a big, powerful message. So anyway, after the show, I was just really dwelling on that and being really excited by that. And I'm going, something I could never imagine it to be. I wonder what that is. Now, here I am trying to imagine what it is.
Exactly.
I'm being told I can't even imagine.
As soon as you said that, that was the first thought that went through my head.
But I'm so glad I went down that road because it reminded me of in my earlier years, probably mid-20s, and I know I've shared part of this story before, where I was just really desperate for a new job. And I tried so hard to get into banking, those doors just slammed shut for me. And so the only thing left was to use my sewing skills, which I swore I would never use to make income because it was my hobby, something I'd love to do. And I got hired like immediately on the phone. They didn't even see my portfolio. They had no idea. They didn't even witness my skill set. I just said I could sew and they went, can you come in tomorrow? And I was like, okay. So the good news was that, you know, I had some income, and which is what I was desperately needing. But over the 4 years that I worked at that company, I definitely learned some new skills, and I met a lot of new people. And one of the customers that came in on a regular basis loved my work so much that they asked that when they had an order, if I could be the only person who ever delivered their order, because they really liked the quality of what I delivered. And so I built a really wonderful relationship with the people of that company to the point where eventually the gal who used to come into the store, she said, hey, I'm about to go on maternity leave. Would you be interested in filling in for me while I'm gone? And so it was an easy decision to say yes, because I wanted to do it, but it was kind of hard to do because I was balancing this new freelance thing on the side with my day job.
Mm.
Well, eventually, when she had the baby, she went, okay, motherhood is way too fun. Don't want to come back. Do you want to keep doing this? And I did my best to do it for a while, but I was having to turn down so much work because it interfered with my day job that eventually I quit the day job and I moved toward this freelancing thing. Well, the freelancing was freelancing in the world of costuming. And it was something that in the past, this is so funny, when I was in college, I hated my costume class. I just thought costumes were boring, didn't like them at all. You know, I just wanted to get down to the fashion design. That's what I was there for. Well, here I am. I worked 4 years at a costume company, learned about costumes. They were no longer boring and horrible to me. I was really embracing it. And now I was going to be a freelance costume designer. Well, lo and behold, I did that for 10 years. And then I took on a partner and I had a costume manufacturing company for 5 years. And I would say those 15 years while I was in the world of costuming was by far the most satisfying career that I could have ever not planned.
Good.
Because I truly didn't plan it. I didn't even want to tell people I could sew. And yet, when the banking world closed its doors to me, that's what was available to bring in income. And what I find so spectacular about this is I didn't want it. Mm. I was being dragged, literally, I'm sure, by my inner being into a world I wanted nothing to do with. Because my inner being knew that this was going to satisfy me on so many levels. So the reason I go into all the gory, juicy details of that story is because last night I was so reminded of how I could not have planned for that career. I could have not have Googled how to find that career because I didn't even know what existed.
True enough.
And so what I was being shown last night when I remembered this story of my earlier years, is in the same way I could have never planned how to have moved into that career. Project X is being formulated and developed on my behalf in the same way. And it's something I can't Google, and it's something I don't even know what it looks like today. But just like I was led to give it up and be willing to use my sewing skills. This time I don't have that resistance because I'm not resisting anything. But in the same way, it's like how that all manifested was so good. It was so fulfilling. It was felt so yummy. And I was being shown last night, Project X has that same set of characteristics. And I will be guided to it in the way I'm guided to it, and I'm just staying open to however the universe wants to deliver it. But I got such a level of assurance that it is in the works. It's not I hope it'll happen. It's like it's now feeling very inevitable to me because I now am able to map it back to a life experience that I had where I saw, even though I didn't know about law of attraction at the time, but where I can now look back and see how law of attraction led me into this thing that was so fantastic for me. And I know Project X is going to have that same result and then some. And it'll be easier because I'm not resisting like I was back then. I still wanted to be in banking and I didn't want to use my sewing skills. And it's like, but I'm not there now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in a very different place. And so my update for today is I believe that I finally have the peace that I've been searching for. I have a knowing of not the exactness of what's to come, but because I was reminded of an experience I've already had that was so powerful in my life, it's like I can bank on that happening for me again because it's already happened once. And, you know, once something's happened once, it's much easier to believe in something happening again than it is when you feel like you've never had an experience and you don't know how it's going to occur.
True, yeah.
Well, in this case, it has occurred. And I was looking back on some Abraham notes that I had taken a while back, and I found this interesting, and I think it fits in with my update, which is Abraham said, it's not nearly as important to focus on what you want as it is to not focus on what you don't want. And how that fits into this scheme for me is by getting this powerful awareness and remembrance of how I was gifted and guided toward a career that was so fulfilling and satisfying. I can focus on that, even though that's not exactly what Project X is, but I can focus on the feelings of how thrilled and excited I was that the universe delivered to me something that was so magnanimous. And that focus will help keep me from focusing on the doubts, worries, concerns, and what I don't want.
Okay. That's good. That's good stuff.
I mean, I've never really thought about it before, but, you know, Abraham is saying it's not nearly as important to focus on what you do want, like over and over and over, as it is to just stay away from focusing on the resistance and the what you don't want.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, that much I know from my own experience. And in fact, just today on Facebook, one of the members of that group were asking, you know, can you recommend one book that would help her with learning how to overcome resistance? My first reaction was the book that we're talking about, The Law of Attraction, The Basics of the Teaching of Abraham. So that's what I recommended to her. But, I mean, yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that is the thing. In fact, I think you and I have previously talked about how we should really be putting an emphasis on that, and maybe less emphasis on, you know, the law of attraction itself, because resistance and allowing, that's where it's at.
Well, and it's interesting because I am now focusing on something very positive, on something that I really want to experience again. But yet the purpose I can sense is not so much to be focusing on that as it is that when I focus on that, it's a detraction from focusing on my previous resistances.
Yeah.
You know, and that actually answers a question I've had for a very long time.
What's that?
Well, because I've been very aware that in my pre-Law of Attraction days, I didn't do a whole lot of focusing on what I wanted. It's like I would decide I wanted something or I'd have contrast. And so, you know, just through the course of how it happens, you know, a rocket of desire was sent off for what I prefer. But I didn't know how to bask in what I wanted or bathe in it. I wasn't doing visual boards. I wasn't talking about it. And yet I manifested a lot of stuff. And so I've just asked myself the question, and I really wanted an answer. How is it I manifested so many incredible things in my life, but I didn't spend a lot of time doing many of the things that they talk about in The Secret? I didn't do the positive work that I hear about. I wasn't doing positive journaling. I wasn't writing lists of positive aspects. And I'm like, how did those things show up in my life if I wasn't doing all that? And I feel like I have the answer now, because even if I didn't do it deliberately, I stopped resisting that which I wanted.
Well, that makes
sense.
I might
have done it by default, or I might have done it, quote, by accident, but I got off the soapbox of talking about what I didn't want, and I just moved on, and in the process of no longer focusing on the resistance, things showed up for me.
You know, as you're describing all that, I'm reminded of last night's show, because Tom and I, of course, did the Tuesday night show last night. And we did get a caller. We got a caller, actually somebody who's been a listener for all the time that Joel's been with me as a co-host. So he's been listening for quite some time. Yeah. His name is BJ. He says that he listens to us while he sits on his tractor in Mississippi. So that gives you an idea.
I love it.
And he called in basically to tell us his views on the victimhood episode that we did on Monday and on how Law of Attraction impacts victims and so forth. His take was a little bit different, but it was interesting to hear. One of the things he did do was he talked a lot about how much he's been enjoying the show, listening to me. He loves Joel. He thinks Joel is wonderful, just the most amazing person. And Joel is amazing. I mean, the things that Joel has done has been just spectacular. And he also said, I wanted to make sure I told you, he said, you should get a show all to yourself. Wendy is so good, she should do a show all by herself. So I thought I'd mention
BJ,
that to you.
BJ, if you're listening, one, I received the compliment. It's so lovely. Thank you. And two, I have to tell you, I think I love what I'm doing because Walt is working with me, and he's like spurring me on with questions and insights. And that's I feel like Walt is an integral part me doing what I do. So, but thank you, BJ. That's very sweet.
Oh, by the way, BJ, I'm glad you said that message to BJ. It reminds me. BJ, you brought up last night something, an idea about how to make it easier for people to log into the live broadcast by clicking on something in the iPhone. And I tried to replicate what you described, and I couldn't do it. So give me an email when you hear this. Send it to walt@loatoday.net. And let's just correspond and see if you can show me where it is you're seeing what you're seeing, because I want to reproduce it, but I just can't do it. So you know, when you get a chance, no rush on it. But BJ, I'd love your help on that one, because it sounded like what you were talking about was really cool, and I want to be able to implement it. And end of message. So we're talking about the law of attraction, the basics of the teachings of Abraham. And we are up to the section that is subtitled, What About When What I Felt... Well, no, let's say that again. What About When What Felt Good Now Feels Bad? What About When What Felt Good Now Feels Bad? And Jerry says, How is it that some people seem to eventually attract something they've really, really wanted, but then when it comes, they find that it turns out to be a very negative situation. It brings them pain.
And then Abraham says, often from a place that is very far from what is wanted, people will decide what they do want. But instead of focusing upon that desire and practicing the vibration of it until they have achieved vibrational alignment with their true desire, and allowing the law of attraction to then reach out into the universe and bring them perfect matching results, they become impatient and try to make it happen by jumping into action. But when they take action before they have improved the content of their vibration, what they get is something that matches their current vibration instead of something that matches their desire.
That's kind of what you were talking about.
There's a lot more, but let's just take that one and unpack it.
Yeah, that ties in very neatly with what you were just talking about with Project X and your experience of it. Because you were talking about how, let's see, let me reproduce this part first. It says, they become impatient and try to make it happen by jumping into action. But when they take action before they have improved the content of their vibration, what they get is something that matches their current vibration instead. And what you were talking about is how you had a tendency to not focus on building up your vibration when you had something that you wanted to attract. You didn't spend a lot of time on it. You didn't do the journaling. You didn't do the vision boards. You didn't do all that stuff. But what you did was different from what they're saying here, because they are talking about how people tend to focus on their current situation, their current vibration. You weren't focusing on that. You were focusing on something different. But the similarity.
You know, honestly, Walt, I probably did for a long time.
Oh, did you?
I know my pattern, yeah. I'd have something I don't like. I'd focus on it for a really long time until I just couldn't get anywhere with it. And then in my own sense of, you know, I'm just tired of beating my head against the wall. That was my favorite phrase. I would just like go in a different direction and go, well, forget that. And so that's what got me out of focusing on what I did not want. And it left space for me to be in the receiving mode to receive what law of attraction had to bring me.
Kind of similar to what happened to me when Louise came into my life, because I've been trying so hard with finding the right girlfriend, finding the right person to be with utter failure. Finally threw up my hands, and a month later I got a phone call from my friend Deborah. Hey, I got a friend who wants to meet you.
Yeah, I mean, it's that giving up thing.
Yeah.
That what we don't always recognize is we're not giving up on the dream or the desire. We're giving up on the resistance. We're giving up on pushing so hard to make something happen.
The trying,
and
yeah.
Personally, I can relate to what Abraham's talking about here, because I have been such an action-oriented individual that, you know, I didn't have patience at all to wait for the universe to, like, get their act together. That's how I put it. You know, come on, universe, make it happen already. Little did I know that the universe was, come on, Wendy, would you get out of our way? So I was taking action left, right, and all over, getting nowhere, beating my head against a wall, feeling frustrated, and I get it. I was creating the very reason I wasn't getting what I desired, and yet continue to get more of what I did not desire.
It's kind of alarming for me because it's really reinforcing once again for me. There must have been dozens of times, hundreds of times in my life where I was blocking my own way. And meanwhile, my inner being was saying, come on, move, make space, coming through, and I wasn't getting out of the way.
And, you know, the one thing we can be truly grateful for within that scenario is that our inner being is relentless. Never, ever, ever does our inner being stop calling us toward that which we desire. We're constantly being called. We're constantly being called. Now, we don't always listen, but we're constantly being called. Thank goodness.
That is a very good thing, especially for those of us who are tone deaf to the inner being.
Been there.
Still am. No, not entirely. Actually, I am learning, but it does. Okay. Sometimes it seems like I'm just like learning 1 inch at a time, but I'm learning. I have to admit, I have picked up more. I understand better how the inner being is communicating with me. I just recognize I've got a ways to go.
You know what? I don't think any of us can just learn everything all in one fell swoop. I mean, the way we, like...
Oh, why not?
I love the... Well, and I will tell you.
Oh, okay.
One of the words I love is sustainability. And the reason I love it is because when you try to make a really giant leap in a really short period of time, it is often not sustainable vibrationally. And the reason I say that is because wherever vibration we're at, and let's just use a number system just to make it easy. So let's say on a 1 to 10 chart, our vibration is at a 2. But to go to where we want to go, like where, you know, our desire is, let's say we need to get to a 6. And so one day we go to a seminar or we read a book or we listen to an audio and it's all about how to use the law of attraction. And we get super excited. And you not only learn about the tools of law of attraction, but strategies and how to listen to your inner being. And you feel like when you exit this thing, you are on fire. And you're like, man, I'm going to reach that number 6 in like 2 days. It's going to be so simple. And let's say you do. Like you do all the things that you learned and you just make a huge giant leap and you're like flying at a vibration of 6. Well, what happens is, and that is possible. But what happens is because you haven't done the work to sustain a 3 and to sustain a 4 and a 5, now that you're at a 6, you haven't done the real foundational work to help you stay at a 6. And so, yeah, you're on a high and you're enjoying all the cool things and you all of a sudden you've attracted the great partner, you've got all sorts of new income coming into your life. Like this all of a sudden happens within a week or two or three or maybe even a month or two. And then the next thing you know, all of a sudden this new relationship is not doing so well. All of a sudden you've spent the money and there's no more coming in. And you start to go, what the heck happened? I was doing all the things I needed to do. And I'm telling you this, by the way, Walt, out of personal life experience. This is not I'm making this up like, oh, let's just throw out an example. No, my life experience is what I'm telling you now, which is I've been the seminar junkie and I did the work and I got to some huge levels and was so excited. And then it took time, but it started to fall apart. And I started at a 2 before the seminars, jumped to a 6. And before I knew it, I went back down to maybe a 2.5. And then I went, see, it doesn't work. You know, I was sold a false bill of goods.
Hmm.
Well, after doing one seminar after another and experiencing that same roller coaster ride, and granted, every time when I fell back down, I didn't fall down to the same level. I had held on to a little bit of growth, but it wasn't huge. And then eventually I started to understand the principle of small incremental steps. And when I understood that, I realized the reason why I want small incremental steps is so that I can reach a level that I could sustain. And so then, even though I learned all this stuff that it could have gotten me to a 6 overnight, I worked on small principles, little teeny things, until I went, I'm sticking at a 2.5.
Mm.
And then I'd reach for the next something. I'm staying at a 3. And then I'd go, I'm staying at a 4. Well, I got to tell you, I've been doing this for a number of years. And, you know, you've heard me say this many times. I can buoy back into feeling happy, like, pretty much within 15 minutes or less.
Mm-hmm.
That's an easy thing for me now.
Right.
But years ago, very hard thing. It could take me days to get to a place of happy where I could hold on to it.
Mm-hmm.
But see, now, let's just say on that 1 to 10 scale, maybe I'm at an 8. And I pretty much am always at an 8. And if something happens in my life that causes me to dip down to a 4, I bounce right back up to an 8 within at least a day, if not minutes. But that's because I have learned how to sustain my vibration at a different level. And so when people talk about, like, is a quantum leap possible? Yeah, it is. But is it sustainable? That's another question.
That's another question entirely. In fact, as you were describing that, it made me wish that I had more, or even any, not more, any training in psychotherapy. I mean, I talked to my wife, who's a psychotherapist, and so I learn a lot from her. Joel, of course, has training in it, and others do too. But I don't have enough knowledge here to know. Maybe you know. I don't know. I wonder if bipolar disorder is tied to that lack of experience with learning the incremental steps. Because when you were describing that roller coaster, that's the thought that kept going through my mind. That's what happens to somebody who's got bipolar disorder. They got the big highs and the big lows and the big highs and the big lows, and there's nothing in between.
Well, I can tell you what Abraham has said about bipolar.
Oh, okay.
Because I've been fascinated by this, because I have a friend or two that, one I know for sure was diagnosed, and a couple others that were speculating.
Mm-hmm.
I like to say it this way, that because Abraham does, and I just love it, that those that experience what we call bipolar are really big wanters. The desires that they have are so big and so intense that when they are in alignment with their desire, they are up, they're happy, they're exuberant. But the moment they get out of alignment, they go slamming back down to a lower vibration or a lower state of being, whatever their sustainable thing is, and then they're depressed, in despair, and they're miserable.
Mm.
And so how Abraham described it is very similar to what I was just talking about, which is in most of them, or I don't know about most, who knows. Anyway, someone who continues to experience bipolar disorder is not allowing themselves to create a new alignment where they can sustain it.
Mm.
And so they just keep going from 1 to 10, 1 to 10, 1 to 10, which causes them to feel very erratic, and the people around them are like, oh my God, you know, look at their lives, because they're a roller coaster up and down and up and down.
Right, yeah.
If somebody with bipolar can allow themselves to go, I'm just going to take it one step at a time, and I'm going to build my alignment so that I can be, like, if I start in despair and I can get happy, and this is a funny way to say it, if I can get satisfied with feeling a little bit more powerful, even if I'm feeling anger a lot of the time, and if a person can sustain anger for a good long time, they will, if they were to drop down into despair, they would buoy right back up to anger.
Mm.
So now if the person's at anger and they climb themselves up to frustration, frustration is a more powerful feeling than anger. They're frustrated, but they're not like, you know, anger. And if they can get themselves to hang out in frustration for a good long time, then even if they dip down into anger or despair, they will buoy themselves right back up to frustration. And so this goes as you climb up the emotional guidance scale. And when you cross the threshold of hope into hope, that's when you start to move into feeling good most of the time.
I'm going to have to ask Joel about this tomorrow, because, I mean, what you describe makes total sense. And my question to him is going to be, is that what therapists do with people who have bipolar disorder? Because it would make total sense if that's what they try to do.
That would be a really good question, and I'll bet they don't.
Well, there's a good chance of that, because Joel does tend to come up with answers that say, well, here's what the industry really does, and here's what it really should be doing.
Well, there you go. Because yeah. I do know my friend who had been diagnosed with bipolar, had been seeing a counselor for quite a number of years, and it's like after a session, that person would give me a call. My friend would call me and say, hey, this is what we talked about today. And most, at least this particular counselor, was really working more from a perspective of strategy. Like do this, do that, versus shifting the belief system that helped them to move up the emotional guidance scale. So,
well, then I'll definitely make a note to bring it up, because it's a good question.
Yeah, that'd be a good thing to find out if, you know, what the common protocol is.
Yeah.
From a professional perspective.
Well, I'll let you know what I find out.
All righty.
So we should move on to the rest of Abraham's answer.
Okay, so they go on to say, until you practice your vibration, there is often a big gap between the vibration of what you actually want and the vibration of what you are offering. However, without exception, what comes to you always matches the vibration that you are offering. For example, let us say that a woman has recently come from a bad relationship where her partner has verbally and physically abused her. She did not want that or like that. In fact, she hated the life that she had lived with that person. So from her place of really knowing what she does not want, she makes a clear statement of what she does want. She wants a partner who loves her and treats her with kindness and respect. But she feels insecure without a partner, and she wants a new partner immediately. And so she goes somewhere, someplace where she is accustomed to going and meets a new person who seems nice enough. But what she may not realize is that the law of attraction is still matching her up with whatever is dominant within her. And right now, what is still dominant within her is the vibration of what she does not want, because the unwanted parts of her last relationship are much more active within her thoughts, and the new intentions that have been established, they're much more active in her thoughts than the new intentions that she has just been establishing. In her eagerness to soothe her feelings of insecurity, she takes action and jumps into this new relationship and gets more of what is dominant within her vibration, which I'll just say is the stuff she doesn't want.
Right.
So it would be our encouragement that she take things more slowly and spend more time thinking about what she wants until those thoughts are the basis for her dominant vibration within her. And then let the law of attraction bring her wonderful new partner to her.
I imagine that there are many people listening who know that pattern intimately because they've experienced it themselves.
Yeah, I know that pattern.
Yeah.
Maybe not in relationships so much, but in just about every other area of my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I would say it was a common practice for me, especially as I was kind of getting to know law of attraction. Like, ooh, is a new toy to play with and unwrap and see what, you know, how to use it. You know, I'm like, okay, so now I know. I just had some contrast. Don't like that. Then I think about, what is it I do want? Okay, I just figured out what I do want. And then, boom, I'm out the door trying to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't spending time really thinking about this new way of behavior or this new experience or what it would feel like, you know, in order to, like, really solidify that new vibrational thought. Heck no. I was off and running.
In fact, I wonder how many times people will recognize themselves as the person going from one relationship to the other, where every single relationship is just like the last one. I mean, it seemed different. Mm-hmm. It was a different person. The person was different. The person had different interests from the previous one. He or she was, you know, different in so many different ways, and yet the result was the same. And I know in my case, it was always the same result of, well, the whole thing falls apart within days. Not weeks, not months, days. You know, one date, boom, you're done. End of the line. And I kept asking myself, what the heck's wrong with me? What is it that I'm doing? Because there's definitely a pattern going on here, and I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to fix it. I didn't know how to address it. I didn't know how to identify it. I was really lost.
And whoever you are, with your current experiences, your current belief systems, your current vibrational state of being, that's who you take with you everywhere you go.
Yeah.
So if you're in a relationship and, you know, you are who you are and you don't like this relationship, and what you do is you decide to change the relationship, you know, and say, okay, I'm kicking you to the curb. I'm going to go find someone new. Well, if you haven't made any changes internally, you are the common denominator.
Yeah.
And so all the vibrations you bring into the next relationship. And because law of attraction is working 24/7, whether we know it or not, or whether we like it or not, you're going to be matched up with somebody very similar to the last relationship. They may have a different face. They may have a different name. But you know what? They're probably going to have many of the same characteristics, because they're going to match what you matched before. Because if you haven't changed, how can you match up with anything different?
And while it may not have made a difference in terms of improving the next relationship, to know that it was my vibration that was the same, that I was basically the reason why it was happening, and it was happening because I was putting out the same vibration all over again. That alone may not have been enough for me to know what changes to make. At least I would have known what I was dealing with. So having that information is not perhaps sufficient to solve the problem, but it's really helpful.
Well, and if you look at a relationship and go, what about this relationship is not working? So can you name one or two or three characteristics in previous relationships prior to Louise that weren't working for you?
That would have been very hard for me to say then. I know now, simply because having come through it, I've been able to identify it during that process of, you know, being with Louise and talking with her and exploring where I was at and going through what I went through with my depression and so forth.
But what did you not like? What did you not like in those relationships?
It wasn't what I didn't like. It was what the other person didn't like. For whatever reason, they didn't like me. Or they liked me, but not enough to go for date number two. So every time, it was always the other person losing interest. And I'm thinking, what is it? Is my deodorant? What is it?
All right. So, just using that one little thing as an example, is I'm able to, like, attract date one, but I'm not able to, like, have it move on to date number two.
Right. Exactly.
And so it's kind of like, all right, you know, that's the kind of thing that you go, that if that keeps happening over and over, you know, the responsible thing to do once you understand law of attraction and you want to be a deliberate creator is to really identify and poke around at, so what is it about only one date? Do I have a belief about one date? You know, do I have anybody in my life that mirrored, you know, like lack of getting a deep, meaningful relationship, and so it just stayed shallow? You know, I don't know, I'm just guessing, but that's kind of like the direction that I would look until I would find something that was like, oh, wow. Yeah, I remember really, truly adoring this uncle. I'm making this up. This Uncle Harry. I loved Uncle Harry. But you know what? He died alone. And he used to talk all the time about all the women that he dated, but nobody really wanted to stick with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved Uncle Harry. And I thought about that all the time. Well, if that were really the case, again, I'm making this up.
Yeah.
But if that were the case, and you start thinking about how you can't have your dates move on to date number two, you can go, oh my gosh, I put so much stock in my love for Uncle Harry, and just, I meditated and thought about and focused on the fact that I thought it was even funny that he'd say, never get a woman to like go out with me the second time. That, oh, I had no idea I was focusing on that. And, you know, even this, you know, silly case scenario that I just came up with, the result of that is very real.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That if you focus on it, yeah, you could, you know, you could be attracted to a woman, ask them out. And then the next thing you know, the reason you were matched up with that woman is because you really weren't a match on a deep, meaningful level. It was just a shallow thing that mirrored whatever Uncle Harry was experiencing. And if while you're playing with it, you recognize that and go, oh my gosh, well, that's not what I want. And you start focusing on, okay, well, what I do want is to have deep, meaningful relationships. And if you start focusing on, I really want deep, meaningful relationships, I don't want these shallow ones where we never move on, that will absolutely shift a vibration.
Well, it's interesting you should say that. It's interesting you should say that, because I do know what was causing it. I know now. I didn't know then. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you say that points to something really interesting.
Did you have an Uncle Harry? No.
No, I did not have an Uncle Harry. No. Nobody liked that at all. That would have been actually much too simple compared to what it actually was. Or to put it another way, it was much too complex for what it really was. When you hear it, you're gonna say, "How did I miss that?" But no, what ultimately happened was, I had no problem getting the original conversations going and so forth, but in the midst of it, all of the chemistry would disappear, all of the magic would disappear, and it would happen for both of us. And I would be willing to keep going just to see if something could keep going, and usually she would not be. Occasionally there'd be a second date where we tried again and it still wouldn't really work. And I didn't understand what it was that I was doing. I had kind of a feeling it must be something about me, but I didn't know what it was. I just couldn't quite get a handle on it. I talked to people. I would even ask dates, what is it that didn't work here? I mean, because I'm really getting frantic here trying to figure out why stuff isn't working out. And the answers were usually along the lines of, well, you're a really nice guy, but I just don't really feel it, which didn't help at all. That didn't really give me, other than the fact that I kept getting that. Well, as it turned out, what I learned many years later was I was actually a very negative guy, and I didn't know it. And it wasn't because I was going around, you know, just bad-mouthing everybody. That wasn't the case. But literally everything that came out of my mouth did not have a happy tone, a happy story to it. It always had a sad side to it. It always had a sad side or a depressing side or an unhappy side or something that was a negative side without being deeply negative. And you get exposed to something like that. If you're exposed to that for a long period of time or even for an entire date, after a while you just kind of start to lose interest and you begin to think that he's not interested. Because all that's coming out is just this, you know, this ucky stuff. It's not really bad. It's just not really nice. You know, it's not great. You do that often enough, and now you got a habit going. But I didn't know I had the habit. I thought I was positive. And that's the key point I wanted to bring up. I think there are a lot of people who have a thing, and the thing could be different from my thing, but the thing ultimately leads them to in some way being negative and not realizing it. And then they get bad results. So was I focusing on the relationship I wanted? Not really. I was focusing on wanting a relationship. And as I was doing my focusing, I ended up focusing on all this negative stuff that was going on. Well, that's not focusing on the joy of the relationship. That's focusing on the lack of relationship. But I spent a lot of time on that. And I had no idea how that fed into it.
So as Abraham is talking about in this chapter that we're reading, you knew what you wanted. Mm-hmm. You wanted a relationship.
Yeah, and I want a meaningful one.
And when you had like a date that didn't go on to a second date, you just ran out there and took more action and looked for somebody else that you could be interested in and yep. tried it again.
Yep.
And again and again and again.
Right, because I didn't know what to change.
Exactly, because you didn't know. And so that to me is also a really important part. Probably every client I've ever had, somewhere within our first conversation, I say to them, you know, don't blame yourself. You simply didn't know.
Right.
And when you don't know something, you can't do anything about it.
Exactly.
But here you are at the point, and it's time for you to know when you're ready. And, you know, sometimes the way we do learn, the way we move toward what we desire is going through something unpleasant over and over and over again until it happens so many times, you finally go, stop the madness. I can't do this anymore. Something has to change. And when you're at that point, that's when you start asking different questions.
Well, actually, what happens is I reached a point where I gave up asking questions and I gave up on the whole thing and let go. And then Louise showed up a month later.
Yay!
That's why the release part works. That's why the give up on it part works.
And for me, it was, you know, I didn't get married till I was 39 and a half. And I say that 39 and a half on purpose because I had this thing that said, oh, my God, I have to be married by the time I'm 40.
Yeah, I could hear that.
Yeah. But what was fascinating is I guess I was in my late 30s. I must have been about 38, 39 at the time. And I was with one of my really close girlfriends, and I was complaining about not finding anybody exciting to meet, and how being that I was in theater, every guy that I did meet that was like a possibility, but it wasn't, because they were either under 18, married, or gay.
Especially
and I'm
in
like,
theater.
That was not a pool from which I was going to find a good relationship.
Yeah, theater is probably about the worst place to go for a relationship if you're not gay.
Exactly. But, you know, those were the people I was around most of the time. And so, you know, this is a girlfriend that, like, she and I were what I call everyday girlfriends, where we would talk multiple times a day and we talked about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, it felt like it was so completely out of the blue. She said to me, Wendy, do you really want to get married? It stopped me in my tracks. And I looked at her, and the answer I was about to say shocked me. I said, no. And she goes, well, then there's the answer why you're not married. And I went, holy cow. No one's ever asked me that question before. I've never asked that question before. And I went, wow, why am I saying no? But I knew that that was like an answer that came deep from within me. And so let me tell you, that gave me some food for thought. And I started asking myself, why would I say no? What is it about marriage I really don't want?
Mm.
And so it took me, you know, maybe a couple weeks, a month or so, to really wrestle this one until I started getting some answers that felt really clear. And I went, I love the lifestyle I have, you know, working in theater. I was out late at night. I slept in during the day, and I traveled often. And I kept thinking that this was not a conducive lifestyle to the image I had of marriage. And I purposely say the image I had, because there's lots of people that have crazy schedules and they can make it work. But the image I had was based on my parents' marriage, which was they both were at home.
Mm-hmm.
My father went out and did his job and he came home and we had dinner together, but they were at home. And when we did vacations, we did them together.
Right.
And so I just thought my crazy lifestyle was not conducive. And I also felt so fulfilled. This is the custom career I was talking about earlier in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I felt so fulfilled through my costuming that I got to tell you, it kind of didn't leave a whole lot of space to even really want a relationship. So then you might want to ask, well, then why did I keep seeking a relationship for all these years if I didn't really want marriage? Well, because I thought I wanted one. I thought kind of it's what you're supposed to do.
Mm.
I was sort of on autopilot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that there were several other reasons. But what was quite interesting is, bless my friend's heart for asking me this really profound question. Do I want to get married? I was thrilled. I was in a place that I could answer it honestly.
Mm.
I did the work to understand why that was the case for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came to a new decision.
Which was?
And then I was like, I do want to be married. I can make space in my life for a man. And my lifestyle all of a sudden was no longer an excuse.
Ah.
Because it's like I broadened my understanding that there are all sorts of people in the world and I can find somebody who will match up with my lifestyle. Now, you know what's really fascinating is shortly thereafter, I did meet my husband. We did get married when I was 39 and a half, so I beat the clock. And shortly after getting married, I got really tired of my costuming life. I really didn't want that career anymore. It was no longer as satisfying as it once had been. And I felt a sense of completion, like, I'm done with this. And so I literally became the stay-at-home, not stay-at-home, but like the non-constantly traveling person. I got into corporate, and I had a daytime lifestyle with my working, just like my husband did. And so, interestingly, we still kind of matched up with the same type of relationship that my parents had.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny, because I thought I had to have a man who could handle my weirdo traveling. It never dawned on me that I would get tired of that career and be ready to move on.
Yeah, sure.
So.
Understandable. Very understandable. So, and it's also understandable what Abraham was talking about at the end of that section that we just read. So it would be our encouragement that she take things more slowly and spend more time thinking about what she wants until those thoughts are the basis for the dominant vibration within her, and then let the law of attraction bring her wonderful new partner to her, which is exactly what happened to you.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think about it in those terms. Like I said, I didn't know law of attraction back at the time.
Right.
It's the day back then.
Right.
But I do know that I made a very conscious new decision that I did want a relationship, and I didn't come to it lightly. It was a very thorough, thought-through choice. And then I started thinking about, okay, well, I used to not think there was space for a man in my life. And I was asking myself, what do I do to give evidence to myself I'm willing to actually make an adjustment here? And I started mentally thinking about, well, if we moved into my two-bedroom apartment, how could I give him drawer space? How could I give him closet space? Well, if we move into his place, would I be willing to give up my apartment?
Mm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
could we cohabitate, you know, in marriage in a new space for the two of us? And these are the things I started thinking about, because I used to be very, not possessive, but I loved my home. I make a nest really well. And so the thought of giving up the place that I'd created as the perfect nest for me was a difficult thought. So for me to say, yes, I want to be married, and yes, I want to make room for a partner in my life, I had to think about my surroundings. I had to think about, could I let him in my space and be okay?
Mm-hmm.
Would I be willing to move into his space and be okay? Would I be willing to make adjustments? And so I guess in a way, it's exactly what Abraham was talking about. That was specifically how I thought about these new thoughts in a way that started to feel acceptable to me. And then I can tell you, my vibration was now, you know what? I have now made space in my life for a significant other, and I'm comfortable with how we could find a way to cohabitate, you know? And it worked. Because I did bathe myself in the new thoughts. I didn't know that at the time, but that's exactly what I did.
And in fact, the end of the section mirrors perfectly what you're talking about. I'll zoom through it quickly because we're running out of time. But it says, Jerry asks, okay, that makes sense. Some people got things they hadn't bargained for. And Abraham replies, that is the value of the creative workshop process. When you get into your workshop, visualizing all the wonderful possibilities, letting your emotions come forth when you are touching upon that which you are really wanting, and then working upon staying focused when it feels good, then you will not have so much of that. You will discover how to make what you do want your most dominant vibration, and then when the law of attraction matches those thoughts that you have been practicing, you will not be surprised. In fact, you will begin to recognize the manifestation of the wonderful things that you have been practicing in your mind. That's exactly what you did. You were making space.
Mm.
You made space, and you did it deliberately. You didn't do it with the knowledge of LOA, but you did exactly what they said, and lo and behold,
yeah,
it worked.
Because I literally was practicing in my mind of what it would feel like, sound like, look like to be in a relationship where we were living in the same space.
All right. Well, we've done it. We've used up another hour, and we've done it doing a really good topic. We did actually stay on one topic. We didn't even get past the one topic, but that's all right. That leaves more for next time. So let's save it for tomorrow and keep going. What do you think?
Absolutely. There's always more.
There's always more. It keeps running and going. So keep coming back and join us next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye now.